Good afternoon, folks. That time of the day again. Time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, joined in studio with my trusty executive director, John Schneider, and our producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy, man who makes everything happen. And
good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, Daryl. And listen, you know, we were just talking a few minutes ago, and you were talking about how you work 7 days a week.
Yes, I do.
I am glad you are here today, my friend, because we have a great show planned for our listeners today.
Well, thank you, Sam. I'm glad you're here too, Sam.
Well, it certainly beats the alternative, I will tell you that. And we're also joined, and when I say, folks, we're going to have a great show, we're also joined by a good friend of mine, Keith Schmidt. Now, many of you folks may recognize the name, but Keith is the president of Bridge Connections. He's consulted with dozens of political races since the early 1980s. Now, those races have included presidential, gubernatorial, senatorial, congressional, legislative, and judicial campaigns. His primary focus has been in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So you can see that Keith has a tremendous amount of experience. He's also always chosen political clients based upon their professional resume and not their party registrations. As a result, he has woven unique relationships with both Democrats and Republicans over the past 30-plus years. And this is one of the reasons why we're happy to talk with him, because here you're getting a true, unfiltered, unbiased opinion. You're not getting somebody that's trying to push an agenda from either side. And this is what we need to know. We need to hear both the good and the bad this year if we're going to be able to take the actions necessary to win in 2024. So, Keith, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for that intro, and thanks for your friendship over these many years. We should have a fun time today. Looking forward to the conversation.
I know we are. And, you know, you and I go back years when I first met you and having sat on panels with you.
Yeah,
and I can tell you they've been extremely enjoyable, and we ended up laughing our rear ends off, you know, on the air. And you always provide some very insightful, informative perspectives.
Yeah, you know, and I saw you mention some things from my probably my website talking about crossing the party lines and whatnot. Parties are hard these days. I mean, it's pretty much now you identify people as more of, are you conservative? Are you progressive? Are you liberal? I mean, that because both parties have blended to a degree. And, you know, I for one, will get beat up every day of the week and twice on Sunday from Republicans who get angry with me at times. But I'll look at a conservative Democrat, and if they stand with me on the issues that are important for my region, my state, my whatever, I'm with them. I mean, I have a certain philosophy. And unfortunately, neither party completely fits my philosophy.
Well, see, that's what makes you different from so many folks today, and especially what matters to me are the folks on the Democrat side, okay?
Sure.
Because, you know, growing up here in Allegheny County, where I've lived for my entire life, with the exception of the 4 years I spent in the Marine Corps, because I even went to college here locally, you know, it's always been a Democrat majority county, you know, where they've always had at least 2-to-1 registration advantage. Okay. So, but I know that as people look to put labels on everyone, that every Democrat here is not a progressive
right.
Democrat. Every Democrat here is not a Democrat socialist Democrat. Okay. And that's the key. That's the thing we need to do, is to reach those folks. So to your point earlier, you talked about what you do, and this is what I used to do all the time as well, is you look at the issues.
Right.
Instead of looking at the little, you know, the little alphabet number by some, excuse me, alphabet number.
Party label.
The little letter. There you go, folks. I'll tell you what, boy, hey, I just gave blood a little bit earlier, and it is showing right now. But hey, but you look at the little letter by their name, okay? The D, the R, the I, and those are really there. It tells you, you know, what party they belong to, but it doesn't always tell you where they stand on the issues. And we sort of lost that. And unfortunately, where I was going with this is too many Democrats today, in my opinion, go out there and they vote for the Democrat that's on the ballot just because it's a D and not really about their stance on the issues. And you're seeing that play out in the congressional race in the city.
Sure.
You know, with Summer Lee on the ballot. She is the incumbent Democrat congresswoman. But yet her stance on the Israeli and Palestinian conflict has caused such consternation in our Jewish community. And we have our Jewish community here in Allegheny County is about 50,000 members of the Jewish community. Okay. So this is, you know, how many folks voted for her not understanding what her views were?
You're saying Summer Lee?
Yes.
Yeah. Before we go, I'm very interested in having that conversation because now that it's a one-on-one race, they're telling me that she's probably a lot more vulnerable. But I just want to pivot back to where we started because we were talking about Democrats and Republicans and blending and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you and I both know one thing. It's great to be a hard-nosed Democrat or hard-nosed Republican. But in the end, it's means to an end. It's really about governing. And when the campaigns are over, you and I have to take all the consideration the criticism we get from time to time, because there are times as an elected countywide official, you have to reach across the aisle to get things done. You have to move the ball forward. And every time they beat you up for working with a Democratic elected official, I'm thinking, we don't have a majority in this county. We may never in our lifetime have a majority in this county. But I want you to do what you can to move the ball forward. It's not going to be perfect, and we have to work with Democrats if you really, truly want to govern.
Well, what's amazing, and you brought up a great point, is so many folks out there do not understand math. Okay, let me explain, folks. There are 15 members of Allegheny County Council. 15. Only two of them are Republican.
Right.
So as Republicans, I can't stop or pass anything on our own.
Right.
You know, we need to take and work with members across the aisle, build a consensus to try to get to the 8 votes necessary to either pass or defeat legislation, you know, on behalf of the citizens of Allegheny County. And I mean, so it's always a challenge. And so I just explained county council. When I talk about the folks that don't understand math, we have a lot of them on our side in the fringe right as well. You know, I've heard, we don't win anything in this county. Well, you don't come out and vote.
Right, the turnout.
You know, and the numbers are, it's almost a 2-1. It just dropped this year under a 2-1. Democrat to Republican, we're at a disadvantage in the county. There's like 508,000 now registered Democrat voters, 258,000 registered Republicans, okay? But it's still a tremendous advantage. You have to come out and vote. And in last year's election, in 2023, general election, and I supported Joe Rocky, and I know you did as well, but only 112,400, let me see here, the number was 112,493 Republicans came out to vote. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's not even half. That was 44%.
Wow.
Of the Republicans that we have registered in Allegheny County.
So what did they lose by 8,000?
Yeah.
I mean, so
like 8,500. Yeah.
So a manageable amount if we'd had turnout.
And we had the best candidate we could have had.
100%.
I mean, a guy, chief risk officer from PNC Bank, the fifth largest financial services firm in the country. We had the money. The millions of dollars were raised.
Right.
So mail went out. Commercials were done. I mean, emails. You had all the aspects. You had the signs. You had everything, okay? But what we didn't have was enthusiasm for folks to come out. And now we're stuck with a county executive, you, who was a former Democrat socialist, and we'll talk about.
And we have been closing the gap here in Allegheny County, as you spoke of, and we really have to realize that our messaging is important. There is the loyalty to parties that I grew up with when I started in 1980 with Ronald Reagan, and you're talking about 4 decades plus ago. The loyalty was definitely present, palpable. But now you have poll after poll in America for the first time, first presidential election in my lifetime, where when people are asked how they affiliate themselves, the number one affiliation is independent. So we have as much chance to get that independent vote as the Democrats because of our messaging and be proud of what we stand for and what has saw us through to victories at the state, county, local, and federal level, and embrace the issues and talk to these people because they're not that loyal to the Democrats or Republicans. They want to hear what we have to say, and we have to hone in on that message and combine that with some get out the vote, and we can still change America.
And we can, but to your point, we need to speak to the majority, okay, on the issues that matter to them. I just saw a poll reported yesterday, and they said that, and I don't have the actual percentages in front of me, but I remember the issues. And for Republicans, the top issue was immigration, the second was the economy, and the third, I thought, was crime. For independents, the top issue was immigration, the second was the economy, and the third issue was protecting democracy. For Democrats, the top issue was protecting democracy, okay? And where I'm going with this is we need to speak to issues in such a way that it not only galvanizes and brings out our base, but also it brings out the independents, you know, on our behalf as well. Because that's how you defeat, you know, a party where you're in the minority, okay? You need to get those extra voters on your side, and it's something we absolutely need to do.
Well, one thing for sure is immigration isn't personal. It's not about your body or your religion or your where your standing is in this great democracy. It's something that's palatable to people, that people understand. And people understand, even if they're not in government, if they're not a bureaucrat, if they're not in the military, if they're not running a state or a county, just the average citizen says, I know how to resolve this. I mean, we can resolve this. It's a border. I mean, fix it. And their aggravation because of something that is, we're not talking about there's a war and we have to see the factions. We have to figure out where this or that's coming from. All these technical stuff. It's like, it's more than ever. It's like build the wall or line the military against it and stop it. I understand they're invading us. Stop the invasion. And I remember a guy at the Starbucks a couple of days ago overheard my conversation. He goes, you know, the one thing he said, if these millions of people would not only be crossing the border, but we'd be crossing the border with weapons, and we know some of them have weapons. But if they all had weapons, he said, we'd find a way to stop them.
Oh, yeah.
So let's pretend they have weapons. He said, because they're coming, they're a Trojan horse. They're literally, we're letting them in, and they're coming out of the Trojan horse at night, and are repopulating America illegally. He said, I wish the American government, he said, I wish the folks in Washington will look at this as an invasion. Because if they saw it as an invasion, they could stop it in a month.
Well, Democrats, they come out and they try to mock Republicans, and they talk about Republicans that talk about the great replacement theory.
Right.
Okay. They try to mock us. Right. But yet, essentially, that's what they're trying to do. You know, and you saw earlier this week, I believe I saw things on Thursday, the Biden administration is now looking at taking illegal immigrants who've been in this country for a long time and giving them legal status and providing them green cards. I mean, their long-term goal is they want to convert these folks to vote. And I mean, if these folks coming across the border were Republican voters, I can guarantee you Biden and the folks in Washington would find a way to stop it.
Yeah, well, say what you want about the former president, and he is a man full of antics at times. But I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent. No one is going to suggest that is not his issue. He's not a Johnny-come-lately. Right. He does own that issue. And for all the people that don't like his the crazy. They say, oh, he says crazy things or he promises crazy things. Crazy works on the border. When Donald Trump looks into the camera and says, on day one, I'm going to send the army down there and I'm going to declare martial law in Texas if I have to, he doesn't lose votes. His votes go up 10 or 20%.
Exactly.
People want result. They've had it. Whatever it takes, they're basically saying, I will empower you. Do it by executive order. I want it over. And if you can do it, then I'm with you. So this is something that's going to be very provocative because I know you and I were both at a fundraiser recently, I think, for Mr. McCormick. And I remember when he said, when on his bus tours, he said, old, young, rural, suburban, man, woman, black, white, Asian, gay, straight. He said, I don't care who I'm talking to. And the whole fabric of America, he said, when I get in front of them and give them a chance to talk and ask them what's on their mind, it's immigration, immigration, immigration. Mm-hmm. He said it crosses all party lines, all secular lines, all religious lines. People have had it. And when asked what they want to be addressed, that's their number one issue. And it's moved in the polls faster than any polling issue in our lifetime. Apparently how it went from, 10 or 12 in the polling, now in most national polls, it's leading far and away any other issue, including the great debate over abortion. So let me tell you that, again, like him or not, the former president has an agenda there that the American people are embracing. And we know in the next 6 months, 7, 8 months, it's not getting any better. I mean, we're now in the waning days of March, but we still have 8 months before we cast ballots.
And it's estimated that the Biden administration will have allowed 10 million.
10 million.
Illegal immigrants to come across this border. Now,
10 million.
You know, now we're talking about this, and we're saying it's not – and we're talking about the former president. We're talking about President Trump. You know, and when he was in, he secured the border. And when Joe Biden came in the first 100 days, he took and signed like 93 or 94 executive orders undoing many of the actions that the former president had taken that had done so. So he is entirely responsible for the mess we have down at the southern border, okay? But the problem is, when I say problem, this election, as we talk about 2024, Keith, is not going to be won based upon the issues per se, because we know that the issues that we're talking about, like immigration, that's the top issue for
sure.
So many people, right? And it's going to be won based upon who can get more of their voters to the polls to vote. And so folks can talk about how disgusted they are with immigration. They can talk about how disgusted they are, you know, with the cost of living, with inflation, with high mortgage rates, highest they've been this century, that with the gas prices. I mean, just the whole bit.
Sounds like you're pivoting to mail-in ballots. I have a feeling there's going to be an agenda change in this chatter right now.
Well, there is, because, you know, we have to do this.
And, we do.
I mean, I don't know what to do. If I have to go door-to-door and shake every Republican, you know, that I find to make sure that they have their voice heard, because
here's my biggest problem with mail-in ballots. And I've been a broken record, and maybe I even said it on a previous show when I was with you, fine gentlemen. The problem with – I'm tired of hearing Republicans, prominent Republicans, and people that are part of the grassroots movement all around Pennsylvania in this part of the country. When I talk about this, they said, oh, Keith, all right, but we'll never compete. He said, Republicans vote on Election Day. I said, guys, it's not about the people that vote on Election Day. What we need to find out is we have to go after the ones and twos. The right. People that with a mail-in ballot, they'll cast a ballot if you make it convenient for them, knock on their door, reach out to them by a text or telephone. We have to get the non-traditional people. And when you look at those, we lost the mail-in ballots by the margin, over the margin of victory. We won on Election Day, the people that voted by 8,000.
Yes.
We lost the mail-ins by 16,000. So yes, literally, the difference was...
He had about 33% of the mail-ins. You know
there you go.
So we lost that by 17 points.
Yeah. So I said, when they looked at, when he did the crosstabs and they looked at those mail-in ballots that she secured, the interesting thing is, these weren't likely voters. She was getting ones and twos, Democrats, to vote. So now they have a registration advantage, and they have a system in which they get non-traditional voters. How do we go up against that? You can't compete with that.
Well,
unless we do the same.
And that's my whole point, okay?
100%.
And I try to explain to folks that the issue isn't, as you start to donors and things, the issue isn't our chasing ballots if you consider chasing, just taking and following up on people who've requested them, you know, to ensure that they vote and turn them in. The issue is getting Republicans to use them in the first place. Now, I go back to 2020 here in Allegheny County. In 2020, every Republican incumbent in the state house won re-election. We won a one state Senate seat with Devlin Robinson in the 37th district beating Pam Iovino. And we really should have won the second with Nicole Zuccarelli beating Jim Brewster, because when all legal, in my opinion, ballots were counted, okay, she was ahead by 20-some votes. It was only after Allegheny County decided to count ballots that lacked a written date, which the federal Third Circuit Court just ruled yesterday that those ballots cannot be counted unless they have a written date on them. So I'm vindicated and validated here, but
100%.
Where I'm going at, we had Carrie Lewis Del Rosso knocked off the minority leader in the House, Frank Dermody, okay? You had Rob McCurry, you know, won in the former Speaker Mike Terzi's seat. So other than we lost a president, let me go back too. We won two statewide row offices, the Auditor General race that year and the Treasurer's race, okay? So for all intents and purposes, it wasn't the most successful evening we had, but it was pretty successful, okay?
Sure.
I mean, I have audio of Rich Fitzgerald on the Marty Griffin Show talking about how we kicked his ass, okay? But let me go over some numbers here. In the 2020 general election in Allegheny County, 218,587 Republicans voted, okay?
Okay.
218,587. 156,834, they voted in person on Election Day.
Okay.
So that was 71.7% of the folks voted. But mail-ins, Republicans voted mail-ins 61,753, 28.3%, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me go to the midterms here, just mm-hmm. 2 years later. So you heard me say that Republicans turned out on Election Day 156,834.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2022, the midterm election, the red wave that wasn't, we had 150,379 Republicans turn out. But the big difference is in 2020, where we had 61,753 Republicans vote by mail, we only had 24,081 Republicans vote by mail in 2022. That's where we're losing. And now, as I look at 2024, only 18,000 Republicans have requested mailed or absentee ballots yet to date.
Well,
okay. If we do not get our low propensity Republican voters to vote by mail, we are not going to have a good night in November of 2024.
These political ad firms and whatnot, the people that are running these races, they don't focus on this. Who has to focus on it? If you talk about a role of a party in American politics and how to change elections, this is clearly something that needs to be led by people like you and the party. And you have to. You might sound preachy, but preach from the highest pulpit that you can. They have to get. They have to hear this. The technology exists now where you can go into suburbs. Any municipality in Allegheny County and print out every 1 and 2 Republican and give it to an organized group in Moon Township and say, hey, Moon, here's 218 people that are low propensity voters. Please, whatever you have to do to contact them, knock on their door, show up with a ballot. If you do that, you could change America. And the difference is when and it doesn't really exist as much in Allegheny County, but if we want to win a national election, we have to be willing to look at southwestern Pennsylvania. And when you go outside of Allegheny County, you have places like Fayette, Beaver, you know, Butler, these counties that are old traditional Lawrence, old traditional Democratic mm-hmm. county that are largely pretty much still registered that way. But when you look at a number where in 2016 and 2020, where Trump carried 78% to 80% in these Democratic counties, they have to be willing to go out there and absentee Democrats.
Exactly.
We're going to win those.
Yes.
I mean, yes. Stop saying you'd only do Republican. Bull. If you have a county in which he's getting 80% of the vote, get the independents, get the Democrats. That's how we're going to win. But here in Allegheny County, I really believe the data exists and we can tell you where they live. You want to help us do nothing else but get these low propensity voters. And I think if you knock on my door and I'm a 1 or 2 and you've made it easy for me to vote, I'm going to show an appreciation and I'm going to vote. I really think that's going to happen.
And that's key. And last cycle in 2023, John and the folks in the committee worked with a number of the local committees to help provide them letters and pre-populated mail-in ballot applications to get out there to vote, okay? But to your point, this is the challenge. Now, so here we are talking about where are we today. So as previous cycles have shown, Republicans can no longer solely rely on day of voters to win elections.
Right.
Instead, we must use the same timeline and tactics as the left if we hope to turn out voters early, by mail, and on election day. However, this can only be possible if Republicans and conservatives encourage voters to turn out early and securely cast their ballots when they vote early, in person or by mail. Now, the left has used all voting methods for decades. And Republicans need to catch up. We need to modernize our election operations because that's where a lot of this is. As I'm talking about, it's not going to be one of the issues.
Sure.
And the issues animate us and they provide responses for the polls. But where the Democrats are doing better than us is they have a get-out-the-vote infrastructure that's designed solely to generate these ballots. And by that, I don't mean that they're doing this in a dark room. I just mean that they have an infrastructure in place that reaches out to the Democrat voters. They hound them and harass them to get them to apply for their mail-in ballots and to turn them in, okay? And they're doing that more effectively than we are. So, as I said...
Well, I really think, Sam, what you're mm-hmm. saying, and I believe it, in the end, it really only matters on who shows up. If we get like-minded people that embrace our agenda, and it's never Rome. If everyone showed up, I think we'd be fine, but it's not going to happen. We have to go out there and find these voters. And I'll call upon you right now on the air, you know, on a Saturday afternoon. You know, I would ask my chairman, my long-serving chairman, to literally challenge the committee in Allegheny County that please don't have a long, voluminous agenda between now and November. I need you to do two things. I want every dollar you have and every hour that you can give to give me get out the vote and mail-in ballot work. If you help me get out the vote, everything you do has something to do with either getting out the vote or getting low propensity mail-in ballots, we could change this county and likewise change America. But if we're spending time doing anything else, it doesn't matter. It really matters if our numbers go up with like-minded people that share our values and share our candidates. And really, they want to do a lot of different things. But because we're treading water right now, you have to say, you know what? It's a critical time. I saw that dip in the midterm. It can absolutely not happen. We don't need to match 2020 numbers. We need for those numbers to go up 25 or 30%. And the only way to do it is if you embrace this agenda for the next 8 months. Get out the vote and mail-in ballots is all that we're going to put our time and resources. If you give to the party, that money will go to one of those two efforts.
And that's what it has to be. I mean, I go back to last year. The number of Republicans that applied for a mail-in or absentee ballot only increased 4% from the 2021 municipal elections. But the number of Republicans whose votes actually were returned and counted increased by 17%. Now, that's a step in the right direction, but sure. It's only a baby step.
Right.
You know, we need to be doubling and tripling that number if we're going to get to where we need to be. And obviously the people that didn't show up, there's a reason they didn't. And I don't know if it was weather. I don't know if it was, you know, personal, kids sick, they were sick, automobile broke, whatever it may be. But that's where the ability to vote by mail, you know, with these no-excuse mail-in or absentee ballots, comes into play and why they need to use these.
Do you have any time at all?
Well, we've got 30 seconds before we get a break.
And the 30 seconds, it just comes to me when we're talking about low propensity and asking the manpower to do these things. It's funny. We're pivoting for when we go into a neighborhood. Remember when we were young, we had a list to tell us where the likely voters are.
Yep.
That's where we have to go. We're asking you to do the opposite. We're asking you to go in a neighborhood and find out where the unlikely voters are.
Exactly.
And knock on those doors. We'll get the likely voters other ways, in television, radio, mail, lit drops. But if you're knocking on doors, let's get the low propensity voter to answer the door and say hello to us.
We're going
to
talk a lot more about that because that's a great idea right after the break. Folks, this is The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM. We'll be right back after the break. Folks, welcome back to The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM. Your host, Sam DeMarco, and we're joined in studio here today by Keith Schmidt. We were just having an animated conversation in the last segment. You know, once we got over my initial confusion, we started to talk about the Republican need to use all methods available to us to vote. And that's early voting, voting by mail. I mean, it takes the whole gamut. And Keith laid out a challenge for the Republican Committee of Allegheny County for just to focus on two things this year. And Keith, do you want to reiterate that?
Yeah.
They were that important.
Yeah, in the end, it's something, as I said, the mail houses and the political operatives and the consulting firms, they don't focus on this. It's really a role of a party, and especially the Republican Party that we love so much in this county. And that would be, it really only matters who shows up and that we maximize the people, like-minded people that share our values and share our support of candidates to show up or vote early or vote on election day. And the way you do that is you put all your resources into two things, either get out the vote initiatives or mail-in ballot initiatives. And you're thinking, well, we want to do a lot of things. Let me tell you, if you concentrate on that, you will be busy for the next 8 months. And if we could maybe set up some competition to try to change the dynamics of the percentage in your particular community that voted in the last two elections compared to this election. If we show up, if we turn out, we win. The fact is the turnout in the end is in the final analysis, that's interesting. Now that I'm just thinking about it. For Rocky, it was the very thing I'm talking about. Had we had better turnout, and we showed that those numbers were not impressive for Republicans, and had we done a better job in mail-in ballots, either of those, and certainly both of them would have assured him a victory, either of them probably would have given him a victory. And the same exists now. We're from Pennsylvania. We're from the Keystone State. We've seen ourselves be the electoral in the electoral map, be the decision maker for multiple presidential elections, even in our recent history. But we understand how equally divided. We have a state house apparently with a one vote majority. We are literally split on the middle. But we're now, folks, every polling that we look at, every roundtable talks about the almost equally divided country we live in. We know this is going to be a late night. It might not even be decided, and that scares all of us with civil distress, the potential of civil unrest. Wow, I was trying to say civil distress. Civil unrest. Our fear of civil unrest if we don't have a definitive winner. But guys, I'm staring it down. I'm looking at these swing states. I know this is going to be a nail biter, and I probably would be among the people that say it probably won't be able to decide on election night, which means it's going to be that close. And if it's that close, to our chairman's point, we need every vote. We need to work our get out the vote structure. We need to look at mail-ins differently. It's not about the person that says, oh, you don't need me, I vote election day. I'm not going after you. Technology will tell me who the low propensity ones and twos are. We're going to put a plan to go together, knock on every door, and to get those people a ballot in their hands and to fill out and to change America. If we don't do that, I'm telling you, it's going to be a long next 4 years. But the opportunity exists. But it is so, it's going to be, don't you agree? No, neither one of these candidates are going to win going away. It's going to come down to the margins.
It absolutely is.
It's going to come down to 5,000 votes in this state, 10,000 votes in that state. And quite frankly, when Republicans come to Pennsylvania and want to look at Pennsylvania, how to win it, they look at southwestern Pennsylvania.
Right.
They look at, can they maximize the vote of swing Democrats and loyal Republicans in southwestern Pennsylvania?
Oh, Democrats are focused on it. We need Republicans to focus on it as well. Now, and my point is, and your point here, you got to show up.
Got to show up.
You know, now Scott Pressler, who's been on the show a number of times, we're big fans of Scott's work. He's doing God's work out there, in my opinion, converting and registering Republicans to vote in Pennsylvania, okay? Now, a week ago, Democrats still had a registered voter advantage of 403,952. Today, that lead's been narrowed to 400,690. So that means in just a week, we've taken and changed the registration to plus Republican 3,262, or reduced their registered voter advantage by 3,262. Okay? Now, for context, at the beginning of 2022, that number was 595,399. So since the beginning of 2022, in the last 2 years, we've reduced the Democrat registered voter advantage in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania by 194,000.
That's substantial.
709, okay? But it only matters if these newly registered Republicans show up on election day to vote. And you made a comment in the last, right before I started off my rant here, and you had said that, you know, if you are one of the folks that goes to vote on election day, we're not looking for you. Well, you know, let me split hairs here. If you're somebody that 4 out of 4, that you go to vote every election day, then I am not looking for you. But the problem is, a lot of Republicans tell you that, but they don't go to vote on every election day. And that's the point I was trying to make in the first segment, when I talked about, like, last year, Joe Rocky, you know, only 112,000, only 44% of the registered Republicans in Allegheny County showed up.
But it's not an off year this year. It's not a midterm. It's a presidential. So there's only so many resources, is my point.
Yes.
So we really can't, the likely voters, we don't take them for granted. But when you have limited resources and know that largely people show up on presidential years at a higher propensity than any other cycle, to a degree, the resources that we, the money that we raise should go to the lower propensity voters and to those swings that are key for us to get that advantage on election day.
I agree. Yep.
So you know, the other thing I'm thinking of is you put a number out there, and you put a lot of numbers out there. But I think in the last 2 years, I think you were talking about we made up like 160,000.
No, in the last 2 years,
yeah,
in Commonwealth of Pennsylvania,
yeah. 594,709. So let me tell you,
that's how much we've reduced the registered voter advantage.
I don't care if those was 195 are likely ones and twos, twos and twos, threes and twos, fours and twos. Those are definitely targeted people, because those people took the time to change their registration, and we know for certain the next time they vote, they're not voting Democrat. Those are the ones we need to make sure show up on election day.
If every single one of those folks voted for Republicans on election day, we win.
Right. And they're not switching their parties and voting Democrat.
Right.
I mean, at least this next election, they become critically important for our outreach and get out the vote and in mail-ins. Even if they're, like I said, if they're likely or unlikely, I think all 200,000 should be laser focused on resources to see that they vote on election day, because they've taken the time to go on their computer or show up at the election department and literally leave a party. So that is, they are as ripe can get.
Keith, I don't know what more I should say after that.
All right, well, so
I mean, you're
all right, I'm pivoting.
You're telling it. Yeah,
I'm not hosting this, but I'm pivoting, because okay, I need to hear more from you. You are a county elected official as the county councilman at large for the great Republican Party, so you have a front row seat on the new transition for Sarah Innamorato in her first 100 days. I'd like you to give us an assessment of the first 100 days and where this might be heading. And in the very beginning of your program, you touched on a little bit that congressional race, mm-hmm, in the city. And I know there were multiple candidates. Now there is, it's just a one-on-one race now. So if
for the Democrat primary.
Yeah, if a Democrat is vulnerable, it's vulnerable. An incumbent is vulnerable in the spring when you only have one opponent.
Right.
You know, there is some vulnerability. And is this other candidate that's running against her, is she for real? I'd like to hear that, your perspective.
You know what? Summer Lee is facing an opponent in Bhavani Patel.
Right.
Okay. I know when I go out to Squirrel Hill, they typically have a vigil for the hostages that are in Gaza on Sundays at noon at the corner of Murray and Darlington. And when I visit there, I see a whole bunch of Patel buttons, okay? But I don't know how deep that level, that support is, and how widespread it is. And, you know, I will tell you, last year, Jay Costa did a poll of his district. You know, he's a Senate minority leader. He's always polling. And one of the questions they asked was, you know, who's the most popular political figure in your district? It wasn't Josh Shapiro, and it wasn't John Fetterman, and it wasn't Jay Costa either. The most popular political figure was Summer Lee in his district. And I had asked, you know, a longtime Democrat, I said, what the heck are these people thinking? And he said, they believe she's fighting for them. So while you and I recognize that, you know, she hasn't done anything, and that a cardboard cutout could bring back the money that she's brought back from D.C., okay, she convinces these people with these little video rants that she's fighting the fight, that Republicans are evil, okay, and that you know, she's in it for them instead of for herself. So, you know, I think Bhavani Patel is providing a challenge, but I don't know that it's going to be enough. If you ask me in my gut, I would say it's not enough, okay? But we're going to see.
That's interesting. 30 years later, it brings back memories of my 94 race when Rick Santorum took on, Congressman Rick Santorum took on Harris Wofford, and it was join the fight. And we were wondering about that slogan, but people loved it. They wanted fighters. And apparently 30 years later, people still like people out there that are scrappers.
Well, see, what
seeming
you,
like they're fighting for something.
What you did is you connected that by coming with the slogan join the fight. You created a movement.
Correct.
And people can get behind movements, okay? I don't see that necessarily, you know, with them right now, and we're going to have to see. Now, Dave McCormick understands that. That's what he's focused on. But you got to build a movement. But I don't necessarily see that with the Patel thing. I would love nothing better than to see Summer Lee defeated. But these progressives are on a roll.
Yeah, agree with her or disagree with her. She is a very visible elected official. She has a grassroots movement, does she not, with the progressives that
yes.
are showing up and populating events. But you just took exception there for a second.
You said she's very visible. Okay.
Right.
I can tell you that she's very visible on social media because she puts out all these videos
and tweets
and things like that, right? But there's a difference between that and being visible in her community, you know? And I can tell you that, you know, in regards to the community we're talking about, the Jewish community in Squirrel Hill, she's not really visible at all.
Interesting.
Okay. So you were pivoting, you pivoted to this, and now I know you wanted to pivot to our county executive.
Yeah, it is the first 100 days, so I think it's fair to say everybody looks back at that point, and we're close to that. I think we're 90 some days, but you sit in any of these meetings. You are the Republican voice in this county of opposition. But have you seen anything so far you can embrace?
No.
Silence.
Hey, look,
silence
look,
is deafening.
I'm stuck here, Keith, because I don't want to appear to be mean, okay?
Okay.
And you know you always want to give somebody new a break, right? You know? However, I got to say, if she wants to succeed as a county executive, she has to first recognize that campaigning and governing are two very different things. And so far she hasn't done this. Now, her first action, one she must have known would attract the most attention, was to raise the minimum wage for all county employees. The problem here is what she said. The problem here is what she said. She said that this was being done to raise the floor for forthcoming union negotiations. She said she did this to raise the floor, create a higher floor for unions to negotiate from, okay? Now, her job as county executive is to represent the taxpayers, not the unions. She hasn't yet recognized, much less accepted that role, okay? Her communications have been unfocused and uninspiring. Her recent statement on the growing reassessment crisis gave us no idea what she planned to do, nor even if she fully understood the problem. Vaguely framed statements filled with buzzwords like stakeholders and intentionally, they don't communicate anything. She would have been better off saying nothing. She's yet, here we are, a full 3 months in, she's yet to appoint a county manager. Now, this should be a deep concern to the people of Allegheny County. Most candidates know who they're going to appoint before they're elected.
Right.
She's been in office 100 days and still seems to be struggling to fill spots. And I believe she also doesn't seem to know the details of her job, especially its powers. I mean, I had to go to court and sue her because she had unilaterally decided to open 5 remote voting sites without realizing that that action required the full participation of the Board of Elections. So this should worry people because it suggests that she doesn't understand the powers of the county executive nor their limits.
Well, I've been in government and politics long enough to understand that that the best executives surround themselves with a great team. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little concerned. To be honest with you, I'm not following it as close as I probably should. I did not realize as the end of March approaches that we don't have a county manager. As you said, there was at least a transitionary time. You would even think during her transition, those couple months, that there'd be interviews or you'd have somebody in mind. You won the Democratic nomination in the spring in a largely Democratic county. Mm-hmm. You could take it upon yourself to think there's a good chance I'm going to be successful.
We're almost a year later.
Yeah,
right,
so that at that point, you're looking at almost a year. So that. Sure, that as a citizen, that concerns me. And quite frankly, you also need experts in housing. You need experts in urban affairs. You need experts in infrastructure. You need experts in transportation and police. And I'd like to know about that team because there is a sense of a 2 or 3 term state rep has somewhat of a limited resume. She could galvanize people if she did nothing else but surround herself with the best and brightest in these many fields. I would pay her a compliment. So at this point, we don't have a county manager. Is there anybody that you've worked with that she's named in her team that you're impressed with?
Let me clarify.
There's the short answer.
Okay. And the person filling the county manager role today,
okay,
is Jennifer Liptak, who was a holdover from the Fitzgerald administration.
Okay.
Now, Jennifer had been the chief of staff for Rich for his entire term. And then when Willie McCain resigned, mm-hmm. In Rich's last year, in I think February of 2023, then Jen assumed that role as well. Okay.
Has she shown any interest of keeping it permanently?
I think that the Inamorato administration, they're advertising.
Okay.
For this job. They're looking for somebody. Okay.
All right.
So Jen is there until they find someone else and Jen can do what she would like to do. Okay. Now, also one of the things that bothers us is, during the election, when she was running up, every time she was asked about anything in regards to economic development in Allegheny County, she talked about reaching out for federal and state dollars. Okay. Her meddling in legislative elections, like she did last week, when her and Ed Gainey and Summer Lee all came out and endorsed Ashley Comins, who's Summer Lee's best friend, who's running against an incumbent Democrat state rep in Representative Salisbury, okay? Now, and the Comins endorsement came without consulting any other members of the delegation, meaning the Allegheny County Democrat delegation, much less a sit-down with the incumbent to explain her position. These things take personal fortitude. Rich Fitzgerald would have made his position clear and given a coherent reason. What we got from Sarah was that she blamed everything on her staff. Right. Must have been a communicate. They were supposed to reach out. Her decision to blame staff for the situation is worrisome. You can't do that sort of thing and expect the citizens to believe you, much less for your staff to remain loyal and feel supported if you're throwing them under the bus. Okay. And last here, she doesn't seem to realize that she's going to need help from the county's delegation in Harrisburg. Otherwise, why would she risk alienating them the way she seems to have done in the Comins matter?
So what you're telling me is she's done nothing to mend the fences because there was some mending needed because we all know that although she was successful in that crowded primary, she did not receive the Democratic endorsement in that primary.
Right.
So she had to mend those fences already. So now what you're telling me from the type of people that she's aligning herself with and the things that she's getting involved in, this is sounding much more like a progressive administration than a Democratic administration.
It is. And that's the difference. Keith, as you pointed out, when a Democrat wins the Democrat primary in a county that's 2-1 D-to-R,
right,
they can pretty much assume it's a fait accompli that they're going to be in office. And here we are, almost a year later, and she has many of these positions that are unfilled. She just announced a director of housing, I believe, on Wednesday, okay? So almost 100 days through, a couple other hires there. So other than the folks in communications, you know, where she had brought on board Abigail Gardner, you know, and they hired a deputy chief of staff, and then she hired, her chief of staff was Grant Gitlin, and then she announced another deputy chief of staff named Ernest Rangicone, and here, listen to this. She hired, here she is, she's a county executive, okay? Not a queen, but the county executive. You have to work with folks. She hires a guy as a deputy chief of staff whose job is to work with other elected officials. So she's putting a layer in between her and the other elected officials. I just don't know how you expect to lead or build a consensus if you're not developing relationships with the people that you're going to have to rely on. And she used the her staff there in the excuse on the Comins thing. Again, look, county council, every member of county council was duly elected on their own by the constituents in their district. I can tell you, I've never sat down and had a meeting with her. You know, she's never asked what was important to me, what's important to Republicans in the Allegheny County. You know, what do we hope to accomplish? To try to find out what motivates, animates us, look for some common ground. And I know it's not just a Republican thing, because I know she hasn't done it with Democrats either.
And I love the county. I love this region. I don't wish her ill. I want her to succeed because I want everybody in government that represents good people of Allegheny County to succeed and move the ball forward for us. But she has to understand that the bright lights of this region shine upon her, and maybe even the bright lights of the country, because progressives have enjoyed a lot of success with DA races around the country, but they've only had very limited success in executive positions. This is one of the most highlighted positions that an absolute progressive ran in the county of over 1 million people and won the day in the primary and won the day in the general. So the eyes are upon her to say, we now understand that they are a very effective grassroots force and social media force and campaign force. They're great at campaigning. Can they govern? And the eyes are upon her. And it's early. It's only 100 days, which means we have the largesse of her first term is still in front of her. So things could change. But she has to understand there is an intense light shining on her to see, can she handle this? Can progressives actually govern in a way that could advance a region economically, socially, politically? And that question remains, especially when you go one building down on Grant Street and her progressive partner, the mayor, is now staring down the possibility of another Act 47 and control board because they're not going to be able to pay their bills. They were talking about that maybe next spring, but now all indication is that time could come sometime before the end of this year.
I think it's without a doubt going to come. And when you're asking, can she? I don't believe that she can. And you know, to your point, it's just like when someone gets elected president that isn't even of our party, you know, and they ask, well, do you want him to succeed or not? Well, we want him to succeed because we want our country to succeed.
Absolutely.
We want her to succeed and that we want our county to succeed. And we'll fight, you know, for the reins of the power of the next election. Okay. However, I've seen nothing to indicate at this point yet that she can. And it seems she relies a lot on the mayor. And I don't know if you just saw, but just the other day, he came out and made an announcement that he's going to sue, you know, a number of the nonprofits. UPMC, again, he's appealing 57 of their properties, you know, and six or seven of Highmark's and, you know, four or five of Pitt's and a couple of Duquesne's. But he's challenging their tax-exempt status. Now, I mean, this to show you how ludicrous this is, he's challenging the tax-exempt status as a charity of UPMC Children's Hospital. I mean, really? He's challenging AGH, Allegheny General Hospital. Okay. I mean, now this is a guy that is such a poor leader. He could have money if he just went to those folks and would accept payment in lieu of taxes, right? I mean, I know UPMC, they're ready to come to the table. They're ready to bring their checkbook. I mean, they're saying it can't be just us. But the mayor, he's caught in a bind here because, you know, he was supported by special interests like the SEIU when he was elected. And, you know, when he first tried to interact with UPMC, he doesn't even really talk to them, but when he first tried to interact with them, it was on the condition that they, you know, not hold an election, but that they unionize.
Well, let's reinforce
all their employees.
Let's reinforce to your listeners, all the people that are listening on this Saturday afternoon, March 30th. I want to go on record as saying a grave warning. The UPMCs of the world and the PNCs of the world, They can keep banks and hospitals here, but they absolutely do not have to keep their headquarters here. And if either or both of these would move out, it would be a gunshot bigger than the gunshot that we experienced in the late 70s and early 80s when the collapse of the steel industry. The headquarters of one of the largest banks in the world and UPMC, which is a great economic generator, especially with the number of people employed, not even in their hospitals, but just in their headquarters. And I can tell you at the highest level, both these institutions are starting to examine, do we need to be here anymore? And if they have a hostile environment, especially with government, and not only a hostile relationship with government, but they're literally throwing them under the bus in the media. They're almost like there's an anti-agenda. Yes. I mean, you're literally killing the golden goose here. I mean, that has to be a concern of yours as a county councilman.
Keith, someone shared with me that she made a comment to some folks where she had said, we don't need any more UPMCs or PNCs here, okay? And she was in a small business. Well, you know, we want all the businesses we can get, okay? But between PNC and UPMC, UPMC employs 95,000 people,
wow,
okay? And between those two, they probably employ like 150,000 people here. So to your point, you know, what the economic destruction would be if they chose to leave, it would be incredible. And Keith, I'm sorry. I start talking, we run out of time. But do you have anything
Holy
you want to say
cow.
To our listeners? Because we're going to have to go.
No, a happy holiday weekend. Thanks for letting me join you, fine gentlemen, again. The banter is always fun. I hope it's informative. I know it's always entertaining.
Well, we appreciate you joining with us as we, you know, sit here on this Easter weekend. We want to wish everybody, you know, wonderful and happy Easter. And, you know, until next week, where we'll convene again and we'll, you know, try to bring some news to you, try to bring some information and try to bring a little bit of fun your way. This is Sam DeMarco, Keith Schmidt, John Schneider, and Dandy Daryl Grandy signing off for The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Have a great weekend.